FNR, Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome everyone, streaming football 24-7. This is FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only radio station dedicated to the beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego, and this is an hour I look forward to every day. I look forward to every hour I speak about football every day, but this one in particular, Football Extra, our daily football show with news and more. And usually on a Thursday, we have legendary Australian footballer Alan Davidson, but we've moved him to Wednesday only for this week because we've got a big, big tribute to Johnny Warren tomorrow. 2-hour tribute speaking to the likes of Otti Abonyi, Adrian Alston, John Watkins. There's so many players that we'll be speaking to tomorrow, and Jamie Warren himself covering just a tribute. I think it's a 13th year anniversary of Johnny Warren's passing, and we're going to do a bit of a special on him tomorrow, a 2-hour special during the Football Extra hour, plus one more. So we moved Alan to Wednesday. I'm sure he hasn't minded, of course, in place of the big Johnny Warren. Davo, good to see you.
Good morning, Carlos.
And you don't mind being moved for Johnny Warren?
No. I was a big fan of Johnny and spent a lot of time with Johnny as well.
Okay, tell us, yeah, that's one thing that's that I really have never spoken to you about, your relationship with someone like a Johnny Warren. He would have been, obviously, a hero of yours as you were growing up.
Yeah, I guess he was more of a mentor too, because he was guiding me at one stage. And I was doing work with there was a Socceroo show.
Captain Socceroo.
Captain Socceroo, and he asked me to get involved in that. So yeah, he was a great mentor and a great lover of the game. And for young players coming through, he was a big fan of young Australian players. So that was great as well.
I remember me racing home from school every day to watch Captain Socceroo. I think it was about 4 o'clock or something on a weekday or once a week or whatever, and Johnny was of course the host. But I don't remember you. What were you doing? Were you doing skills or something?
I was doing all the skills and the drills. So yeah. I used to fly up to Canberra and I used to stay at his house and then we'd go out and film and we'd do all the skills and drills and all the things that we wanted to talk about, and I was the, I guess, the guinea pig.
And I would imagine having spoken and interviewed Johnny a number of times over almost two decades, that he would be talking a lot of football with you.
Johnny was very passionate, and I guess we're all passionate, but, you know, I think that's, you know, a great tribute tomorrow as well. The legacy Johnny's lived, and in terms of how proud he was for the Socceroos and the football developing here and where he thought we could go. And he had a lot of high aspirations that Australian footballers could do well. And, it was a sad day. I went to his funeral and, it was a sad day when Johnny passed, but he still lives with us.
You talk about his legacy. Do you think we've lost something in the sport since he's passed?
Well, we're definitely.
Or has his legacy sort of lived on and sort of almost permeated the whole game and sort of his spirit has lived on in the game?
I think his beliefs have come into fruition. So, not having Johnny around is a great loss, you know what I mean? So you can never replace that. But his dream of football and how the game should be played and his faith in the Australian football players, that's what I remember of Johnny and how he used to talk it up and how he used to tell us and even with myself, how he used to talk about me and what he thought and blah, blah, blah and all that sort of stuff. So he was a great mentor for me.
Is there, and again, this is a question of our notice, we've actually got another topic we're going to cover today, Davo, but every opportunity I get, you always, whenever I do meet you, there's always something new I learn about you, and I didn't realise you were so close to Johnny Warren, but tell us about the bond between Australian footballers or Socceroos from different generations. It seems like you may not meet a person, you would have seen him play back in the 70s and suddenly you meet them and there's a special bond that you've done something, you've worn the green and gold, you know what it's like. And even though you might not know the person all that well, there's this special, special bond that exists.
I don't know if it's a bond. I probably would call it a respect. You know what I mean? There's always a respect for your teammates or past Socceroos and even, you know, current or future Socceroos. The Bond is the Socceroo club, I guess, and the privilege and the honour of wearing the shirt, and we all know the road because the road is very similar. We're all playing for our country, and we're all representing Australia to get to or play in a tournament or get to the World Cup or Asian Cup or whatever it is. So the journey is very similar no matter which generation you're in. But the feelings, the emotions, you know, the highs and lows of being a Socceroo and the proud moments, they're all similar, and I think that's what's the bond.
Mm. David, let's take a break, and when we come back, I actually want to cover the topic that I had planned for today, and that is your experience in Asia as a footballer. You went relatively late in life to Asia, in your football life rather, and you end up building a terrific career, and I've witnessed your influence in Malaysia and your reputation there. I've actually seen it, and I'd love to cover that with you for the rest of the show today. Let's take a break. This is Football Extra with Alan Davidson, legendary Australian footballer, here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Live across Australia, this is FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego, and this is Football Extra, and with Alan Davidson, legendary Australian footballer. Now, Davo, the topic for today is your experiences in Asia as a footballer, and the reason why we raise it is I remember there was such a big deal for many decades before we actually got accepted by the AFC to be part of Asia, the Asian Confederation. This idea that we should be going to Asia, you know, all our players will go into Europe to develop, but the whole time you even experienced that yourself, you know, getting opportunities over in Europe, but no one was really thinking of Asia in a big, big way. You ended up going there at the time when you were probably thinking that your career was maybe winding down a bit.
Yeah, I was. I just finished three World Cups campaigns, and we were unsuccessful, you know, and I was at the stage, I was 32, and Eddie Thompson was trying to, you know, he offered me the Socceroo captaincy to come back and start playing for the Socceroos again.
And this was 1989?
No, 2000? This is 92, 91 and 92.
Oh, sorry, yeah, sure.
So, and I'd sort of, you know, had my highs and lows and a lot of disappointment, you know what I mean? And I got a phone call from Ken Warden. He said, listen, you know, they're looking for a player over here.
And just for people out there who didn't know who Ken Warden is,
I met Ken Warden. He was Melbourne Knights coach. Yep. For 1 year, and then he went over there, and he sort
to
of
Malaysia.
Yeah, yep. And we just finished two back to back finals with Melbourne Knights against South Melbourne and Adelaide City, and we lost on penalties on both games. So, so I was just had enough of football, you know what I mean? And I was even considering about just giving the game away, you know what I mean? I was at that age where I was thinking, and this phone call came, and I thought, let's see what, let's roll the dice and see what happens.
Did you know anything about Asian football?
Nothing.
Because of your background, you've got Japanese heritage in you, but you never really considered ever playing over there?
There was an opportunity, but it just wasn't right at that time. And anyway, this I spent a season with Ken Warden, had a lot of respect for Ken. He went over after the final, and he took over a role there with pretty much one of the biggest clubs over there, and I got a phone call, and he said, listen, would you want to come to Malaysia? And I said, Malaysia? So they play football, do they? And then he turned around, he said, listen, it's great, blah, 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 and he sold me on it, and I said, all right, I'll come over. And I had to fly over, and I had to meet, at the time, the king of Malaysia.
So was this Pahang? The club you end up playing for over many years. Yeah.
So I went over. He was the king of Malaysia at the time. I flew in. I was there for a day, and I just met the king, and he turned around and said to me, I went to his palace, and he said, listen, you know, I've been told you're a good player. It's very simple. You know, there's five trophies here in Malaysia. We want to win. You know, I haven't won one. He was the president of the Asian Football Confederation as well, and also the president of the Malaysian Football Confederation, and he sat on the board at FIFA as well.
Wow.
So he was a high, passionate football lover. But his team could never win, and he hadn't won a trophy for 10 years. So he basically said to me, you win me a trophy, I'll reward you. If you don't win me a trophy, I'll sack you. And that was it. And that was pretty much it.
And you weren't going to be a coach. You were actually a player that they wanted on the field. So, Davo, that first contract, everyone thinks you're meeting the King of Malaysia. They're going to reward you with riches you would never, ever imagine in Australia. What was your first contract like there?
Oh, it was just pretty, you know, it was a simple contract. It wasn't, you know, huge money or anything like that, you know. I think I was on, you know, $1,500 US or something a week and plus bonuses, you know, and bonuses you lived on. So, and that was it, you know. It was just a change, I guess. From the rut of, you know, not winning two finals. We finished on top both years, and we'd with the Knights, and we lost the final. And I was just looking for something. I was just looking to get out of football, probably. Yep. And this was a new challenge, and I was up for the challenge. And as it turned out, I ended up staying. You know, I went there for a 6-month stint just to see how it was, and ended up staying 6 years.
So how did you? Firstly, if you didn't take that option and you were going to get out of football, what was your option if you were going to get out of football after the glorious career you had? Did you have any other sort of talents, any other sort of aspirations in work or a career?
Yeah, I'm very flexible. You know, jack of all trades, master of none. You know what I mean? So, you know.
So you really didn't have anything definite to get out of football?
Weren't
you running a restaurant or something at some stage?
Yeah, restaurants. I've had all sorts of businesses, you know what I mean? So it wasn't so much that. It was just, you know, my passion's always football. So, you know, like I said, you go through these highs and lows of winning and losing and not qualifying or whatever it is. But there's always – the passion still stays there, and the challenge – and I was up for a challenge over in Asia, and I didn't know too much about it. You know, I was sort of impressed when I got there and seen sort of the level it was at, you know, in terms of who you're meeting and stuff like that. And the football was good too, yeah. The football was it was quite a good standard as well. So it was enjoyable. You know, I went there with an open mind, I guess. So there was no preconceived expectation. Yeah. I just went there and, you know, then, you know, realised how much, you know, the following was, how big the game was, and, you know, full stadiums, you know, 40,000 people at a game. Like, I think that, you know, the attendances were just mind-boggling on its own.
Mm. So, David, tell us, you've met the king, right? Mm. The king said, you either win me stuff or I sack you, right? Did the family come over with you when you first went over in that first 6-month stint?
Yeah, I had a young family. Jason was only 10 months old or something like that, and 1 year old, and Effie flew over, and we went over there, and it was just like a working holiday, I guess, if you want to call it that, you know, but an adventure. So we went over, we had an open mind, and it was great. You know, we love Malaysia. We're even thinking about going back to buy a property in Malaysia.
So. Look, I'll tell you what, let me buy an adjoining property to you guys because I love Malaysia.
Yes.
Love Malaysia. I never played football over there. And by the way, the climate. Whenever I travel there, it's like really humid. I can't imagine playing football. What was that something you had to get used to when you first got over there?
Absolutely. There was a lot of adjustments, but I mean, it's like anything. You know, you just work through it. You know, it was very hot. I remember going over there and got off the plane and walked out into the airport, and then once we got on the street, I was just hit with this wall of heat, and that really took me back. But after I'd been there 1 or 2 years, I remember coming back to Australia in mid, you know, like we'd come back in January, and with jackets on, you know, so it was cold here in January.
Yeah. So tell me about, okay, when you first got over there, Ken Warden was the coach.
Yeah, I remember actually getting out at the airport and they were all waiting for this Alan Davidson. No one had seen him, you know what I mean? It was all...
So it was big media around Alan Davidson.
Yeah, well, I was walking out the airport, you know, and I was thinking to myself, all I remember is all these TV cameras and press and all that, and I walked out, and as I walked out, I was looking for Ken Warden, and Ken Warden's gone in to look for me, so now there's only one person who recognised me. So I've walked out, they're waiting for this Aussie blonde Australian to come out, I guess, and I walked out, and they probably thought I was a local, yeah. You know, and I walked out and I just stood there and I was waiting for about 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and then I was looking and all the cameras were all waiting and I thought, oh, it must be royalty arriving or something, you know what I mean? And then anyway, Ken Warden come in and goes, oh, Alan, you know, and then all the cameras were switched on and they're all looking, and I'm standing next to him for the last 10 minutes, you know what, yeah. I mean? And then anyway, the next day it was the headlines in the papers were all, the Aussie samurai has arrived.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. So tell us when you first went to your first couple of trainings, it would have helped that Ken was there as the coach. That would have been a good settling, you know, a bit of comfort for you. But
Ken wasn't the coach.
Wasn't he
was at Selangor. I was at Pahang.
Okay.
So he took on a role at the national team. After he did, in his first season, he did really well, and he took the national team for a period, and he got close to the king and the crown prince with the national team, because they were heavily involved with the national team, and that's when the connection made. And he recommended me to Pahang, which was, you know, Pahang, I think there was two clubs that were really massive over there. That was Selangor and Pahang, you know, so two Manchester Uniteds or Manchester City, if you want. And from there, you know, it was just business as usual, go to training, meet all the players, and then, you know, try to mix in with the, because understanding Asian culture too, it's not that easy to mix in with Asians. They're very quiet and that, but because of my Japanese heritage, I understood that sort of Asian culture, or the East and West, so that helped, and I enjoyed it. Like I said, enjoyed it to the point where, you know, we stayed 6 years.
David, let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about the achievements over there and a bit more about the royalty and the relationships you actually sort of almost forged that still today. You're very close to the royal family here in Malaysia, and I'd love to hear more about that. This is Football Extra with Alan Davidson, legendary Aussie footballer, here on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24/7, this is FNR, Football Nation Radio. It is Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego in the studio with me, as he is every week. It's Alan Davidson, Australian football legend. Now, Davo, we've established that you're now royalty in Malaysia. You've met the king. You've got your find your way over there. You didn't really know what to expect, but you've joined Pahang. And tell us firstly about the pressure and the expectation on your shoulders when you first went over there. Did you feel the expectation as a foreigner in that country? And of course, the media, obviously, you talked, the media throng was there at the airport to meet you. Obviously, people thought you were pretty much a star that was going to bring silverware to Pahang. Did you feel the pressure at all?
Not really. I didn't really know. I didn't know until we started playing, I guess. And, you know, we were playing at full stadiums. Like every week, it was 30, 40, 50. 90,000, you know, like it was unbelievable. I didn't know how big it was, or how big the following was, and how big the code was in the country. And that was evolving as I was there. But then I realised that, you know, Pahang was a big team, you know, so they were. And then I realised that all the players were national team players, and, you know, he'd bought all the best players and whatever. But what they wanted was, what the team needed was probably a leader, as, you know, someone who had a big mouth and organised everyone, and that's probably why I was recommended. But and they were just missing a leader that would connect everything together on the field, and that was pretty much my job, you know. And
so you at Melbourne Knights in the change room, or at South Melbourne in the change room, and of course you would have been the same. You would have been outspoken. You would have had your say about things. You would have been quite demonstrative about what you wanted from your teammates and what you wanted from the team itself. Were you the same over there, or did you have to temper that a little bit because of the Asian approach is a bit, maybe a little bit softer. You couldn't be as direct, maybe?
No, I was pretty direct. Yeah. On the field I was, but I wasn't so much shouting out negative things. It was just, you know, shape and structure and tuck in or whatever and getting everyone organised like I did at nights pretty much. But off the field it was different, you know what I mean, because they were very shy players. They didn't say much, you know. No one had a shower. Like, I remember after the first game I was sweating like a dog, soaking, you know. It looks like I jumped into a swimming pool with my strip on, you know. And And all the guys didn't shower. They just went home, you know. Yeah. Actually, I remember the first we played Johor, who were the champions of the year before, and they had Abbasad and Alistair Edwards, who had done well for them, and they were probably the two first foreign Australians there, you know. And there was a lot of foreigners, but not many Australians. And Abbasad and Alistair Edwards were we played against them, so they did well the previous year, and then we beat them, you know.
Beat them in that first game,
which is a league game. And I remember we all waited after the game. I'm sweating like a dog, and I'm wanting to have a shower, and everyone's standing there, and everyone's waiting. No, wait, you got to wait. And then the king comes in, you know, and he comes in with a 50 group entourage, you know, and everyone's at attention, and everyone's bowing, everyone's kissing his hand and stuff like that. And we're all just standing there waiting, and I remember Captain Zainal, he'd have a discussion with the prince, and the prince would say, "Listen, five, you know," and Zainal would say, "Oh, okay, thank you, Your Highness," you know what I mean? And
what did the five stand for?
$5,000 bonus for every player.
For that one game.
So, and I was thinking to myself, I was complaining about hanging around waiting, I want to have a shower. And I was thinking, geez, this is great. You know what I mean? I'll stay as long as you want. And then when we went outside, my wife was saying, geez, how long does it take you to get changed and have a shower and get out, you know? And then anyway, the king and the prince and everyone went around and shook everyone's hand. And then anyway, that was the bonus. He used to come to the game every game and give bonuses. And that was, like I said before earlier, like you'd have your money, but you'd make more money from the bonuses if you did well and achieved.
And so your relationship with the players, after the game, did you get together and go off to places to celebrate a win or anything like that?
No, the players are very introverted and quiet, and I respected that. That's the way of the culture. But slowly, I guess it was a time thing. You had to earn your respect and earn their confidence, I guess, you know. And first thing, you know, they respected me as a footballer and, you know, at training and all that. But they were very shy. So for me, I had to sort of tone down, like you mentioned earlier, and be more of a friend and try to be more friendly and start communication, even though they couldn't, some of them couldn't speak English, but most of them could. It was just the one thing with Asians is the one thing you don't want to do is to embarrass them in public or embarrass them in front of people. And that can be, you know, through being, you know, Asians don't like confrontation or they don't like to be put down. No one likes that. But, you know, the Westerners maybe have a different outlook on that, whereas generally speaking, right across Asia, Asians are very conscious of being quiet and respectful and not saying much. And that was the thing that I was always conscious of. And as it turned out, you know, as I was there longer, I got to know the players, and we used to go out with some of the players and their families and stuff like that. Yeah, and then became part of the furniture.
So tell me about that first year. You beat Johor in that first game, and how did the rest of the year pan out?
Well, my job was to win one trophy, so pretty much we won all the trophies.
And what were the trophies? Of course, league title, FA Cup.
Malaysian Cup, there was Charity Shield, all those that sort of stuff. We even won the Fair Play one as well. So we won them all, you know, and it was a great year. The king and the prince were really happy, and that's where my... the team was exactly the same team as the previous two years, and I was the addition, and that particular year we did well, and I was accredited to a lot of the success there, I guess, from being a leader on the field, maybe. I got this title of being the general. They called me the general, you know what I mean? So I don't know if that was good or bad. But the thing was, we were there to win. Everyone benefited from it, and the team benefited from it. We won the trophies and stuff like that. So, and I also benefited from it. So from staying from, the beginning of a six-month contract stint, basically, we didn't know what we were getting into. We ended up staying there 6 years, and we love Malaysia. We love the Malaysian people, and couldn't talk highly about Malaysia. And we're considering to go over there and buy an apartment over in Malaysia and live in Malaysia parts of the year.
So tell me about the Australian footballers who were playing there at the time. You talk about Alistair Edwards, and I still remember the Australian and British Soccer Weekly, and every now and again there'd be this little story about Alistair Edwards playing in Malaysia, and the other one was
Abbasad.
Yeah. Of course, he had his issues, the gambling issues or something.
There was a lot of things about that too.
I'm not sure whether that was in Malaysia or was that in
Singapore.
It happened in Singapore. Yeah. So was there any pressure? Because there was a lot of talk about the corruption in Asian football, especially in Japan. That's always been pretty clean. But in China, in Malaysia, in Vietnam, this idea that the betting, even all those years ago, we talk about the 90s here, that the betting was so huge and some players were succumbing to the temptation of being, maybe throwing games or doing stuff that compromised the result. And obviously, by way of betting and by way of getting into trouble, that sort of led into that. Abbasad was caught up in all that. I'm not sure what the outcome was in the end. I noticed he's a football commentator at the moment over there. Did you ever face the temptation or the anyone ever approach you to maybe affect a game by not trying as hard or by doing something that could affect the betting patterns for that game?
I was naive to it. I didn't think that was I wasn't involved in it for a start. So I was learning as I'm going about Malaysia. But there definitely was our first year. From all accounts was, and what I heard the following year was, I was the pivoting link where no one really knew me that well, so they didn't approach me and they didn't know which way, and this is coming out later on. But, I've been approached, and the first year Pahang was a team not to be touched because I was a unknown factor, And because I was playing last man, I was in a key position, so a lot of money could have been lost. So, but then as the years went on, I started to realise that, I was approached. I remember you were sitting down in Singapore and I was sitting down. A lot of people used to come to you. A lot of people knew you. And in Singapore, I remember sitting down in a foyer, actually, and the guy came up to me in a suit and said, "Listen, Alan Davids, I'm your biggest fan, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "Oh, thanks very much." It's a nice guy, just general small talk. And he said, "Can I speak to you?" I said, "Yeah." So he said, "Oh, do you want to have a coffee?" And I said, "Okay, let's have a coffee." And we sat down and have a coffee. And he said, "Listen, Pahang's already won the championship the second year." And he said, "Listen, Singapore fighting for relegation, and it's so important that Singapore doesn't get relegated."
Because Singapore was playing in the Malaysian League.
And he said that, "Listen, it's so important for the Singaporeans," and he said, then he changed the subject. He said, "How much money do you make?" And then I remember this distinctively because I remember he goes, "How much money do you make?" And I looked at him and I thought, "What?" And I said, "I'm happy." And he goes, "Listen, are they looking after you? Are you making money and this and that?" And he goes, "You're a profile and I'm sure you'll be making good money, but how would you like to make more and a lot more?" And I looked at him, I said, "How?" And then he pulled out this little bag and it was full. It was $50,000 in the bag. And he said, "This is yours. And all we need is just one goal from Singapore. All you got to do is let someone go and try to tackle him, missed the tackle and let him score. He said, the goalkeeper's already been bought. Your two strikers have already been bought and the two midfielders have already been bought. You're the only one. Mm. And he said, $50,000 US here. There it is. You know what I mean? So I said to him, I don't know what his name was. I said, listen, you know, you seem like a really nice guy, but now you've crossed the line. You know, I'm disappointed that, you know, you come to meet me and you're a bookie, you know, and we're in public and I'm talking to someone that I don't know, thought was just a general spectator. I said, now I've got to go to my manager, my coach, and explain to him what's happened here because you've put me in a very uncompromising situation. I'm not dirty. Mm. And told the coach, told the manager, and that was it. Everyone, you know, it was a meeting that was discussed, so everyone knew all about it, and everyone knew that I wasn't involved in it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just looking after my name, you know. Yeah. And then from there on, actually, they went on to the game, and actually, it was interesting because we played the game. It was pretty heated contest, and a sub came on, a young boy came on, and he scored a goal, and it was the 1-0 winner. And
for you guys,
for us, yeah. Mm. So, but there was the corruption, I think.
What happened to the strikers, the midfielders, and the goalkeepers? Well, was that actually true, or
they never could prove it? Yeah, you know what I mean. They took all the phones and everything, like the players and stuff like that. But you can never really prove it. So you know, and I remember once going to the royalty to say that, you know, there is corruption in the game, and they said, Alan, you know, can you prove it? Mm. And I said, no, I can't. And they said, well, if you can't prove it, what can we do?
Let it go.
Not so much let it go. Mm. You've got to be able to prove it. Mm. Like, it's not about, you can't go out there and make accusations. You know, I remember one time, even because they were cleaning it up, because I remember Malaysia after the World Youth Championships, and they were cleaning it up, and there was one year they were really trying to clean it up with the police and all that sort of stuff, and they were locking up players everywhere, and Pahang was pretty clean at the time. Mm. And then I was going to the airport, and two plain guys walked up to me with their suits on, and they pulled out their police badges, and I thought, what? And I'm ready to fly home. They said, we'd like to speak to you, you know what I mean? And they took me to the station, and then went down to the lower offices. And then, you know, they just said, listen, we know, you know, what's happened past, but have you got any information, this about, you know? And I said, listen, I've said what I have to say, you know what I mean? And there's nothing else I can tell you. And unless you can prove it, I've been told, unless you can prove it, and I can't prove it, you know, these are just things you hear and see. Mm. And they said, no, we know you're clean. There's no problem. Don't feel threatened. It's just that, you know, we're trying to clean the game up.
Now, you're coming out of an Australian system where I believe, well, certainly publicly it wasn't any controversy over players throwing games in the NSL or anything like that. I don't remember any story. I'm not sure whether you heard anything from a player's perspective, but you're suddenly going into a competition in Malaysia where you've sort of hit between the eyes with what happened here with this guy coming up to you. From that moment, I know you just let people know and you sort of, you know, weren't involved in anything beyond that. From that moment, did you question the motives of some of your players if they weren't, you know, if they were good players and suddenly something happened? Did you start doubting whether they were maybe throwing the game or doing something to affect betting?
There was times where you used to think about it. My mind was very naive to all that sort of stuff. But I started to understand in Malaysia there's also a lot of betting, you know, like in Asia, I guess, you know. Asians are notorious for gambling. Mm. And, you know, Chinese and the Indians. And then I found out that there was their syndicates, you know what I mean? So syndicates were betting on games. And I'm talking, you know, $2-3 million riding on a game, you know what I mean? And, again, still a bit oblivious to it all. But at the end of the day, it was happening, but to which teams at the time, it's hard to work out, but were we involved in it or were our players involved in it? I don't know. Mm, you know, it was one of those things that you never discussed, and I was one of those, because I was very open and blunt about where I stood in this picture, you know, I guess that sent the message out, you know, don't come to me. So I was a bit blind to it, maybe, or a bit, like I said, naive. But it was around, and I, you know, there was players getting locked up, and I'm talking high-profile players were getting locked up, and they were making a lot of money out of it. Do you know what I mean? If they're talking, you know, $2 or $3 million rolling on a game, you know, there was big money, and you know, players were getting paid. I know from my own experience, I was offered, you know, $50,000 just to let someone run through and don't worry about it. Yeah.
So, Davo, how many years did you end up staying there?
6 years.
And how many trophies do you reckon you won? You ever counted up all the trophies that you won during that time?
Oh, I don't know. Probably about 12.
Yeah, okay. So the king and the royal family were quite happy with you in the end.
Yeah, I got a title over there. They had a function, and I was awarded a title, and yeah, that was a very proud moment, you know. And what it basically meant was I was part of the royal family, and I could go and visit them all the time if I was in town or whatever. And I got a very close relationship now to the Sultan of Pahang, who'll be the next king of Malaysia anyway. So and it was great catching up with him during the Asian Cup. He was the head of the Asian contingent, and I've got a very good relationship. And we've built a lot of strong ties over in Malaysia and in Asia as well, because it's not just Malaysia, Thailand, Vietnam, Singapore, and Indonesia. There are vast, growing football nations, and it's mind-boggling how big football is in those areas.
I was actually lucky enough, Dave, and I'll divulge this to our listeners, that I actually went over to Malaysia with you a couple of years ago, and it was, and we were going back to Pahang, and I remember thinking to myself, and you hadn't been back in 15 years or something like that. I can't remember what the figure was. I think it was about 15 years, and I thought to myself, oh, it would be nice to be back in Pahang. Maybe a couple of people might recognise Alan, and I remember I had my film camera there, and we, you know, were doing a few filming, you know, sort of projects, and I to this day I can't believe that we I met the prince with you, and the prince said, oh, why don't we just you know, get all the players back from the 1992 team and the ones that won the premiership, and let's have a scratch match, you know, I think it was the next night or the night after that at the main stadium. And I'm thinking, okay, the players will get together. It's just a bit of a scratch match. You're using the stadium because the Prince basically owns the stadium. And I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, they might have 50 people there or something like that. And we rocked up, and I still remember, Davo, there was probably 5,000 people, and it was just word of mouth. It wasn't in the media. And it was it the Malaysian police versus your former team?
That's right, yeah.
Did that surprise you that after 15 years, that they all heard you were in town and they decided to come to the game? Really no notice at all.
Yeah, I was shocked too, because, you know, I didn't think that, you know, it'd be 15, 20 years since I've been there. And, yeah, it was nice. It was nice, and maybe a bit flattering in some ways, you know, because it was nice to meet all the fans again. These are all fans of today, not sort of 20 years ago, but... yeah, we had a good time, and it was great just to catch up with all the old players and catch up where they are and see what they're doing, and they're all involved in the game somewhere and with the club and stuff like that. So yeah, it was a great day, and I guess when the Prince does things, you know, he does things properly as well, and yeah.
Davo, let's take a break, and when we come back, I just want to talk about Australia's presence in Asia, and whether, you know, we're all looking at Japan and China, but, you know, places like Malaysia and places like Vietnam and Singapore and these sort of places, are they destinations for some of our young players to at least get experience? We'll address that after the break. This is Football Extra with Australian football legend Alan Davidson here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24/7. This is FNR Football Nation Radio. It is Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego. We're in the home stretch now with 5 minutes to go. We've got Alan Davidson in the studio speaking about his experiences in Asia. Now, Davo, Malaysia today, of course, in those days, you know, the wages were good for foreigners, but probably just basic wages for the local players. But today, it is actually a really good destination if you're a professional footballer looking for maybe something different, or maybe a professional footballer that wants to get a decent income by playing regular football.
Well, I just thinking, well, there's opportunities there. I'm sure everyone knows Mike Mulvey. I got Mike Mulvey a job over in Malaysia and he's loving it. And now he's gone over to Thailand and he's loving it over there. Foreign players, I think the budget's around, you know, $35,000 net a month, you know what I mean? So, you know, it sort of makes it attractive.
Has it become a destination for, say, you know, in the Balkan regions in Europe, for example, where they're great standard leagues, but money's not always paid. It's the resources aren't great, but the players are terrific. Some of those Croatian players and the Serbian players, Bosnian players, you're seeing more and more of them moving to Malaysia?
Well, when I was in Malaysia back in 91, 92, there was full of Croatians, Serbians, Czechoslovakians, Polish players, all these, you know, those Iron Curtain, if you want to call it, Balkan states. And they still are. You know, Malaysia's no different than any other country in the world, maybe except for China, where they're looking for quality players, but cheap players where you can get by them. And definitely those areas are cheaper than going, you know, to South America or going elsewhere. But don't be disillusioned here too. They have money. They spend quite a bit of money on players, or especially foreign players. They've got the money. There's a lot of South Americans playing, a lot of Brazilians playing in the M League at the moment too. So there's quite a diverse range of different nationalities. But they're after the right player, like every club. So it doesn't matter what colour or what country you're from, as long as you do the business, they're prepared to pay. As long as you come up with the goods.
We've had a few Australians go over there over the years, especially in more recent years, as a real option for them. But are Australian players attractive to Malaysian clubs? Or like you said, it doesn't matter where you're coming from if you're the right player.
I think the Australian, there was, you know, Abbasad and Alistair, and then I went over, and then there was a bit of an influx during that next 3 or 4 years. They started to think that Australian players were lucrative, and then it sort of died off a bit, and I don't know where it is actually at the moment in terms of Australian players. I don't know how many Australian players are playing in Malaysia. I don't really know if Australian players know of the destination of Malaysia. I didn't know nothing about it until I got there, and I was blown away with everything, you know, and the quality of, like, I remember Pahang, we played Adelaide City in a tournament. This is like a gauge, I guess, in some ways. Adelaide City just won the old NSL that year, and they came over for a holiday and they had some practice games, so they've come and played Pahang and played Selangor, and we beat them 2-1, you know, so... It's a practice game, but it's just a bit of a gauge of the standard. You know, it was pretty even, you know what I mean? So, I guess, the game's growing in Southeast Asia. I think it's a great destination for players to head there if they're at a stage where they're not getting enough, especially for young players, maybe they're not getting enough football time with the A-League, you know, go over there for a year, you know what I mean, and try to break in there, and not try so much to break in there, go over there, do a job for them, and then come back and get some experience.
I think we've seen with Andrew Naboo that it could be a real positive. I think Diego Ferreira's gone over there, and I think he's in India right now, but a couple of them actually made a really good living over there, and they go from country to country. But I think these days they're coming back better footballers because of the experience. But Dave-O, it's been great talking to you again about your Asian experience. You've always got different stories to tell, and that's what I love having you involved with Football Extra on a weekly basis. So thanks for joining us today, mate.
My pleasure, mate.
That's Alan Davidson, legendary Australian footballer here on FNR Football Nation Radio. That brings Football Extra to an end for today. You can podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud.com. So until this time tomorrow, and it's a big one tomorrow. Johnny Warren tribute goes for 2 hours tomorrow as part of the Football Extra. Tune in for that. Until that time, may you have a great day in football.
Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego and Luis Taffer on FNR Football Nation Radio.